I'm really trying. I'm really trying. Like, I watched the Leafs game last night, and I got Leafs talk to do, so it's on my primary. But my eye is just drifting, you know, because it's the start of the baseball season, so it's new. So I care about it a little bit more. Yes. Am I invested in Austin Matthews' goal chase? Absolutely. Do I think, actually, we're probably not talking enough about how the Leafs are close to Florida, and does that matter, trying to catch the Panthers, blah, blah, blah. Whatever. Of course, there are Leaf stories down the stretch, but come on, it's the new thing, and my eye is drifting. I'm looking. I'm glancing over. I'm glancing over at the old laptop that I'm running the Blue Jays game on as I'm watching the Leafs. And I'm flipping over during any commercial break, like, very quickly. I'm on top of it. Like, I want the sound. I want to see what's going on with your Toronto Blue Jays. And I'm trying so hard to not overreact. Like, I really am. I'm trying so hard to be the kind of person who goes, I know that a month and a half from now, I know there will be a time where the Jays are normal and where the Jays hit maybe not the best, but maybe not like every game where you go, ooh, guy's going to score a run tonight? Any runs? No? Cool. Trying not to just let last season bleed into this season and take all of the ghosts from last year and pile them onto this year's team. I'm trying to remember that it's a 162-game season, that it's incredibly long, and I'm going to burn out if I'm this upset, if I feel this level of frustration watching this baseball team. But it's testing me. It's testing me. The Toronto Blue Jays, they're a nightmare to start. This is the nightmare to start the season. They're not a nightmare, but this is the nightmare start that I was actually cautioning against. They're one miracle David Schneider home run, let's be honest. Like, hanging slider, he punishes it. He deserves all the credit in the world. But it's Josh Hader who hangs one of the best closers in the last half decade, who hangs one for David Schneider from being 2-5. Being 2-5, and then also this. The Toronto Blue Jays just set a franchise record. Woohoo! Record night in Toronto last night, by the way. Record night. Everybody's setting records, baby. Let's go. What a city. What a sports town. They set a franchise record for the fewest hits, 9, and batting average. Oh, thank God batting average doesn't matter. Otherwise, this would suck. 106 is what they just hit in a 3-game series. 106. Yeah, it's 3 games, but it's 3 games where they started a year where the questions about the team were, can you be normal at the plate? Are you going to regress positively? Is Vladdy going to start hitting fastballs, or is he going to still go down 0-2 in counts and then miss meat? Kind of looks like that. Darton Varsho did flare one early on in the ballgame. He got a hit, but it's like, is Darton Varsho going to look better? Is Alejandro Kirk going to look better? It's like, so far, no. Is the lineup going to feel a little bit deeper? No. And then, of course, yeah, the one guy who actually did something, who saved them the night before, ends up getting benched. Anyways, the previous lows were 10 hits and 112 average. That was the bar you needed to surpass for us not to have this stat to throw around. That was the bar. Pretty low. Pretty low. Especially since you saw another team's fifth starter. And yeah, I get it. He shut you out, but not great. Not great. And it's okay. I get it. It sucks. It's ugly. It's a terrible start to the season. But I'm mad about a whole bunch of things. Like, the offense looks terrible. They're obviously the number one perpetrators, and this is going to fall in the front office if they continue to look this way, if they continue to play this way, and yeah, just absolutely can't find anything at the dish. I wonder how quickly there's going to be job security questions with certain guys, because, like, even if you look at Jim Bowden, a guy who has been, I think, pretty friendly towards the Blue Jays, like, pretty... It's not like a local guy who is over the top in terms of praise or protection. He's very much like a outsider who used to do the job. And he's talked about how the most likely guy to be the first manager fired is John Schneider, right? Like, I think it's pretty clear that Ross Atkins is going to wear a lot of this if the offense doesn't turn it around, if they continue to look this way. Because, woo, nightmare. Anyway, but Let's just talk about a couple of things that pissed me off about yesterday. Outside of just this feeble, feeble offense that has started the year looking exactly like they did last year and is getting off to exactly the kind of start, unless they're facing a slop toss and lefty from the Tampa Bay Rays, like you thought they were going to. Why is John Schneider benching Davis Schneider a game after he hits a home run that gives them a win in a game where they couldn't buy a hit? The guy that actually has a good OPS to start the year, a guy who's now hit two bombs and showing some power and actually driving in runs and giving you surplus value at his position from a bat standpoint and like has since he come up. Why are you doing that now? Like why? There's a reason why coaches are afraid to screw with lineups. And sometimes it's dumb. It is. And it works, but it's like, last year during the playoffs, for example, the Leafs, they won the series, but they sit Michael Bunting, and there's really no way that you could have said Michael Bunting wasn't one of the team's best 12 forwards. Like, it's stupid, but it works, and you get scared, and it's so dumb, but it's such a tenet that most of us looked at it and went like, nah, he's right to not do that. He's right not to put in one of his best 12 forwards unequivocally into the lineup during the most important time of the season. And John Schneider, as this team is pressing at the plate, decides, yeah, you know what? The computer told me that he shouldn't be in this game. And so I gotta trust my God, the computer. He's got this thing he told BNS before the game that it gave them the best chance to win. Whoa, you didn't win and you didn't score any runs, Johnny. You didn't get any runs. And Davis was sitting on the bench the entire time. Then they put him in at the end of the game. It's like, it's a little late. You already put Wes Parsons in. The human white flag. Wes Parsons, who I'm also mad about that. How could you let Wes Parsons make this baseball team? How could you look at that guy throw baseballs and say he should be on a major league roster? I don't care that they're down three relief arms. There has to be somebody better than him. There has to be someone that throws a ball that is capable of getting an out without extremely hard contact, either going over the fence or to the warning track. A guy who's just like sweating out there, praying for the night to end. Praying reminds me of when I was a young goaltender, we would have to take trips down to BC in Alberta and I'd get shelled for 10 goals against some awesome team from Southern BC. And I'd be like, please take me out. And they would be like, no, you're eating this. You will eat it. That's Wes Parsons. He and I are one in the same, praying to be benched. Maybe if I had a coach like Christopher Stieg, I could have been somebody. Maybe if my parents had the Clever app. But, okay, so that pisses me off. Here's the other stuff. John Schneider, okay, you don't play Davis Schneider. Fine. Why are you letting Chris Bassett pitch to Yordan Alvarez when he's 2-2 against him, has an incredible track record against him, and you have an open base? It's a one-run game with two outs. Why are you? He just hit a home run. He just took him deep to center field. How about you walk the guy and face the next batter? How about you try to, you know, live to see another day? And then after 10 base runners, by the way, through four innings pitched, you go, oh, surely Chris Bassett's going to come out of this game. You escaped it. It's a two-run ball game. Lord knows the Jays aren't scoring four runs right now, but maybe they could scratch and claw their way to two and get this thing to extras and pull off another miracle with Davis Schneider getting back up as you finally come to your sanity and put him in the baseball game. No, Bassett, get back out there, baby. Get back out there. Throw the rock. Bang, bang, bang. Oh, what do you know? The guy that's been getting lit up all game long continues to get lit up. And boom, another couple runs cross the plate because obviously Nate Pearson wasn't going to get runners out in scoring position. That was never going to happen. Letting him enter a game where there were runners on? What were you thinking? What was going to happen there? So it's just multiple mistakes, like self-inflicted wounds, same kind of bozo stuff, the same frustrations and the same terrible offense. So yeah, that's me trying my best. That's me trying my best not to be frustrated. So good stuff, Blue Jays. Great start to the season. We're barely, what are we now? Yeah, seven games in?
Seven, yeah.
We're seven games in, and I'm like, thank God it's an off day. I need a break. I need a break from watching you guys 7 days in. Thanks for the break. Anyways, Christopher Stieg, the Clever app, two-time Stanley Cup champion. New business ventures with a drink called Quench, which I'm excited to receive multiple samples of. I better be getting a lot of Quench. I got to tell you, that'll be the drink of choice for me on this show. What's up, brother? How are we doing?
Well, I went to my first Blue Jays game. I was in Florida with the kids for a week, so I did get to see the Blue Jays.
You see them play at Tampa?
Tampa, yeah.
Which game?
It was the game where Vladdy he was kind of picked off at first.
Mm. That's your memory.
Was that the third? And then it looked like he didn't care. And then,
it looked like he didn't care. Dude, there's nothing I like more than when athletes say other athletes in other sports look like they don't care, right? Because if I would have come at you, it'd be like, these guys care. We care. And then you retire, you look at Vladdy, you're like, he doesn't care. That's the best.
Oh, my gosh. I was like, again, I ain't no baseball analyst.
I mean, that's pretty clear. You went to a game. I'm like, what game did you go to? And you didn't tell me the score. You didn't tell me the...
It was 3-0 at the time. Yeah. And then the Rays, I don't know why they took their pitcher out. He had no runs against. And then they started to get shelled a bit. But Vladdy got picked off at first. And then laughing. And I was like, the Jays, they don't care.
Mm. Well, yeah. It's not a good start, buddy. It's not a good start. They're really
as much as I know about baseball too.
Yeah, I know. Okay, here's what I can say. This will be the last time we talk about baseball on air. Okay, this is gonna be it.
Or me going to the Magic Kingdom and realizing I hate the Magic Kingdom.
Oh, really? You realize that the Disneyland wasn't for the adult?
Oh my! And then kids crying, my two boys crying all day. It was the first time I may have ever cried at a theme park. Pure exhaustion. I can't find coffee anywhere. You can't find coffee anywhere at Magic Kingdom. And then when you get in a line, it's 30 minutes to get a coffee. It was the most non-magical place that I've ever been.
The Star Wars part of that park, though, is amazing, apparently. Everybody says the Star Wars part of that park is incredible.
Hollywood Studios. We actually went to Epcot, Epcot was legit. I was having beers in every country. German beer, French beer, whatever it may be. That's a whole different park, but it's more designed for, I think, adults. That's where the Frozen ride is. It was actually pretty cool in Ratatouille, but that Magic Kingdom, let me tell you, hell on earth for me.
Here's the thing. I don't do theme parks anymore because I'm an adult and I don't have to pretend to be someone.
There's a lot of adults there.
Yeah, yeah. No. I'm not saying, because they have children, but I'm saying.
No, with no children. Yeah.
Yeah.
Those rides, I'm like, Magic Kingdom, not for me.
Yeah. Where I was going with it is, I don't like rides, okay? Like, I was always afraid of rides and I was always ashamed to be afraid of rides. Like, every picture of me on a ride is me with my eyes closed, gripping whatever handle there is so hard that I like might bend it as though I'm a superhero. I hate them, but the only thing I hate more than rides is lines. And so theme parks are basically just designed prisons for me. Like if I die and there's hell and they're like, oh, welcome to hell. I'm like, I know exactly what this is. And they're like, you guessed it. And I just walk in and it's Wonderland. Like they're like, everyone's having fun around me and I'm getting sick in the bathroom and trying to just leave to get funnel cake, but they're like, we're all out of funnel cake, and then I'm in hell. That's all it is for me.
And there's no real rides anymore. It's just you go sit in a little car and put glasses on and watch 4D, and then you come out sick.
Those are my favorite rides, though, actually, because I'm like, I'm safe.
I can't do those ones because all the smacks to my head, I'm sure, don't help it. But
yeah, that's probably right.
4D on?
Yeah.
You might as well put a puke bucket right next to it. And I remember like doing rides at one of those like Carney theme parks back in the day, the Octopus and the Gravitron, and I puked right on my brother, literally on the ride.
Nice.
So rides aren't really the spinny rides and those 4D aren't my thing.
The crazy thing is that like, I hated going to real theme parks. Like my uncle would take me to Six Flags and we would do Wonderland and I would be terrified on those rides. And yet when the X would come to town, I loved it because I liked those rides like the Gravitron because you weren't up high. And then later in life, you're like, oh yeah, all the deaths happen on the carny rides.
Yeah.
And here I was being in the Gravitron trying to move around with my brother being like, oh, I'm going to move.
On the Gravitron always. With like one little belt on you. And you're like, how am I going to stay in this thing?
Yeah. See, I was a fan of the carny rides. And then the older I got, I was like, oh my God, I can't believe my parents let me do this. This was right. This was not right of them. Anyway. All right. So, I want to get you on. One, you saw the Lightning, and they played last night, and I kind of want to pick your brain on them a little bit. But you're a power play guy. You've always been a power play guy. And the Leafs' power play, basically, you know, outside of trade deadline, since the last time I had you on, has completely gone in the tank. They were 4-44 in March. They scored yesterday on, you know, Matthews rips one, and I went, oh, maybe some of this is just Morgan Rielly being able to deliver guys pillows. But how, I guess I didn't really realize how important Mitch Marner was to this. Like, is this a lot? Like, how much of this struggle is just a cold power play versus getting Mitch Marner back? And when they do get him back, is six games, because that's realistically what it's going to look like for him, is six games enough time for you to feel confident in terms of finding your rhythm again?
First off, the Mitch Marner injury, I think, is a big thing for his rest and recovery getting in. So I think that's a big piece of it. But looking at the power play, a guy like Mitch playing six games is nothing. He'll be right back into the swing of things. You know, watching their power plays is the zone entry. You watch a guy like William Nylander. He's a guy that can kind of pick his way through the neutral zone. Matthews as well. But it's the play when you enter the zone. It's the simple play, the simple kick out that gets to a guy. And really, there's only certain few guys on the planet, Kucherov, Marner, Kane, McDavid. These guys can pick their way through, make a simple play, gain with possession, and then off that possession, they're able to get set up and make plays right away. And there's really no one that can do it on the Leafs like Marner. Now, Nylander, yes, he can gain the zone, but then he always wants to make a harder play. So off his zone entry, he's getting in there. And he wants to do more than what's actually asked of him. So he gets through the middle of the ice, and he wants to hold on to it for another second, where all it's got to be is a simple kick out, get the puck back, and now you're set up. And Mitch does it, you know, wonderfully, like better than anyone. So I think that piece to their power play, when you get him back in the lineup, entries into the zone, entries having possession, getting set up, and then having the puck in his hands on the power play where he can kind of settle it down in a different way. Like Nylander, Nylander's looking for more home run plays. So if he's a half wall guy, he's looking more for that back door. He's looking more for a shot, where Marner's looking to set up, you know, either it's Rielly up top for a one-timer, looking to go through the seam on a simple seam play to Matthews. I just think there's more simple plays that add higher value from better areas on the ice than Nylander does in those positions. So I think when you get him back, six games is nothing. He'll get right back into the swing of things, and, you know, their power play will start clicking again. But those are the aspects that I look at. Is if I was even talking to Nylander right now, it's like, man, you have the puck so much. Just make the simple play, which is hard to tell guys like that a lot of the time to do. But that piece with Marner is why he is so special. It's, you know, you watch like a D-man who makes a great first pass. You lose him from the lineup. I look at Duncan Keith back in the day. He was the king of the third assist. He was the guy who made a simple breakout pass that no one thought, it doesn't look hard, but they're actually extremely hard to do, which ends up giving us line rushes, and we'd score off a line rush, but he wouldn't even get an assist on it. Those are the type of players that are so important to a team, and that's why Mitch is so important, especially on the power play.
So, yeah, you're not worried about a rhythm, because these guys have gone into lulls before when it comes to the power play. Like, zone entries have not, like, that's been a problem for them in the past, too. So six games, totally fine. That's enough. They'll get in a rhythm. That's okay.
You know what I worry about? Just looking at minutes and looking at things is, what are they going to do over these last six games to rest guys? Is Matthews going for 70? Hey, yes. This is a question. More important than managing him coming down the stretch to be ready for a playoff run, or pumping him out there 22 to 25 minutes a game to get him to 70? I think it's a valid question. I don't know. What do you think on that? But those six games for me are more about time management and getting guys ready for the playoffs, not forcing these guys minutes and force feeding them and worrying about, oh, they got to get in a rhythm right now. I think right now it's just about time management, getting everyone comfortable, elevating your bottom guys' minutes, and getting them a little more involved and ready for the playoffs. Because I think the top guys come playoff time, they're always hungry and ready to go.
So I think you've basically what it's going to come down to is like, so they've got 7 games left, right? But I'm talking about it as though it's 6. Because I don't think that they're going to play everybody all these games. They've got 2 back-to-backs left, and the way they close the season is on a back-to-back. They go Florida on the 16th and then Tampa again on the 17th. My guess is that Tampa game, they're sitting a bunch of guys. The only thing that would change that to me is I don't know how you sit Matthews if he's sitting on 69.
Yeah, I agree. You can't.
Yeah.
You can't. That's why it's like, how are you going to manage him a lot to get him to 70? Mm-hmm. Without extending him consistently in long shifts or in D-zone face-offs and stuff like that. You want him to get to 70, but you're going to have to manage his minutes. I mean, this guy's been playing 20 to 25 minutes a night, every single night, all game. And you watch him yesterday in the game, he's counter-hitting guys. He's in the mix. He's battling. Like, he plays a heavy, hard game. He plays a really heavy, hard game. And you need him for the playoffs, and you also want him to get to 70. It is like a catch 22 a little bit, but you can't sit Matthews.
No.
If he's going for it.
So my only thought was with the potentially sitting of him, which again, it gets more and more difficult because he keeps scoring goals and he clearly wants it, man. Like, you're seeing the shot attempts right now and
wild.
Like, he's ripping the puck. Like, he's, but I actually think that they've been able to sort of, this is the real story to me. They've done a good job of being able to blend both. When he's on the ice, they're making sure that he's getting a ton of ozone time. He's been playing with guys that have been finishing and guys that have been setting him up. Domi's almost like shamelessly looking for him at some points. There's been opportunities. Like, Domi's had 2 wide open looks at the net where he's hesitated and like looked behind him and tried to shovel one over to Matthews. And you go, man, this is probably a goal if you have this. But yeah, the shot attempts are through the roofs. But here's the ice time that he's had in a couple of these games. Like Washington, they're up 5-1. He doesn't get a goal. He played 18:51. You know, the Sabres only played 16 minutes in that hockey game. Yeah. Still managed to get 5 shots. Like, he played against Florida. He was still under 20 minutes last night. He was over 20 minutes of ice time. So, yeah, like, there's going to be those games where he still presses. He's still going to play 20-plus in a lot of them. But down the stretch here, that's out of his last 5 games, he's only cracked the 20-minute mark twice. And I'm like, that's all right. If you can do it that way, I think that's kind of the way you do it. Because, and like, this is the part where I kick it back to you as a player. That dressing room must care about this big time. Like, I can't imagine that it's not the driving force for them right now as they're closing a regular season that, it's kind of like they don't care who they play in the first round. I don't think that they really care if they're at home or away. Like, I think they care about their leader hitting 70 goals and being able to, for him to say that for the rest of his career.
Well, you care about your teammates hitting milestones. I remember myself, I was going for 20 goals one year. Ladd had an empty net. And he passed it over to me. He like literally waited and passed it. Or if Kane was going for milestones, or if Kopitar, sorry. Like, all these guys that I've ever played with that are hitting certain milestones, the guys care about it. So I couldn't imagine being a part of a team where you have a guy who has an opportunity to hit 70, who's your leader, who cares about everyone. That is, I mean, it's got to be at the top of your mind every time you're on the ice. I know if myself was on the ice, you'd be looking for him shamelessly, just like Domi would be. Mm-hmm. You'd be looking for this guy because this is such a massive milestone for a guy that, when's the last time 70 was hit? Was it Timo?
Yeah, 90s.
Yeah, like, this is wild what he's doing. It's similar to McDavid going for 100 assists. Mm-hmm. Like, these guys are hitting wild milestones that people, you know, in the mid-2000s when scoring was down, no one thought these would ever be possible again. So every single guy cares about milestones that other guys get, whether it's guy hitting 20 goals, hitting 30 goals, certain assists. You're always looking for your teammate. That's just how hockey players are. So having these guys have this drive them forward and keep them engaged is a big thing. But yeah, like, when I'm talking about time management, again, they've done a good job. It's just something that's going to be big for them going into the end, but also elevating these bottom guys, because you want your bottom guys to feel good going into the playoffs. So really fluff them up a lot, give them a lot of minutes. And that's the biggest thing I think you need to look at going into the end of the season. But you always care about your teammates' milestones.
That's it for me. If I'm Keefe, Actually, maybe I don't even say this to him, but let's put it this way. If I'm Matthews, I'm understanding, man, I want this milestone. This means something to me. The guys want to see it for me. I think it'd be good for the room, but good for the energy. But if we go into the playoffs and I don't score any goals, I understand what's going to be said. You know, yeah. Like I understand what is going to be said about me and the way that all of a sudden a 70 goal season is going to be turned into not a joke because it's an incredible accomplishment, but that no one is ultimately going to care here. Like Matthews is doing something unbelievable. And in this market, I think if you're a fan that's over, I don't know, let's say 30, you're kind of going, all right, like it's cool, but we want him in the postseason. Like, you know, do the same thing when it matters the most. If you guys look burnt out or you don't have this energy, this focus come postseason time, I think as much as you feel like you can't amplify the criticism any further for this team, I do think that it does hit another layer because it does discredit some of what he's been able to do here. I just, like you and I have talked about this a million times, but I think that the team's only path to real success is with falling an identity behind Austin Matthews, that like they play with a real attitude. There's never going to be that nastiness from the stars that people want to see. Like Matthews is never going to be someone who lays a huge hit. He had a nice reverse hit yesterday, yes, but he's never going to be like the guy that goes in the corner and crunches someone. He's not going to be the guy like Kachuk who gets in someone's face and is laughing at them because he's thrown them off their game. That's not going to be Marner. That's not going to be him. That's not going to be Nylander. What's going to give them attitude and a real feeling of identity is when they're pumping goals in the back of the net, and it starts with Matthews and he's doing the huge Tiger Woods fist bumps and the guys are all falling in line and playing with energy. That's when I look at the Leafs every time and go, ooh, they feel dangerous tonight. Like they look like a real team tonight. And so if I'm Keefe, I love the goal streak because I'm thinking guys are playing, guys are staying engaged. No one's losing their focus and we've got something here. I want to roll that into the postseason.
You want to roll that into the postseason, but again, you come back to time management. You're bang on about Matthews having to score in the postseason. That's literally how they built their team, and we've talked about this for how long. You do still need your bottom guys to help you win. I would love, though, like if Austin did go in and just smoke someone, you know, one game we talked about it and brings out their emotion in different ways. Or like, remember when Marner was getting punched around and he didn't do anything back, similar to the Sedin thing, stuff like that. You still, you know, I know that's not how they're ever going to emotionally lead, especially in the postseason, but you still will need that at some point from them. They cannot go through 4-7-game playoff series. And if they get punched, they can't punch back. So those things are something they're going to have to do. I know it's out of characteristic, and you're talking about that now that they've never done it. They're never going to do it to the same extent as a Kachuk or a Marchand or anyone like that. But if they're going to win in the postseason, they're still going to have to do it at some point. They're still going to have to react at some point and get emotionally engaged and do other things besides just scoring a goal and just relying, oh, if Austin's not scoring tonight, then how else are we going to feel good about ourselves, you know? It is something that does drive the team forward. And if he doesn't score in the playoffs, obviously, you know, where all the answers are going to, or questions are going to be pointed to, but they still will need to do that to a certain extent to bring the emotion out of the rest of the team in order to drive the bus forward. I know you're saying it won't happen, but it will have to happen, especially to go through 4 playoff rounds. You can't expect Matthews to score 5 to 7 goals a playoff round. Can you?
No, but I do. Here's what I like is I think he's got to be scoring absolutely every single round, and he's got to be scoring in big spots.
He's going to have to score every round.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, like, I like the fact that this team, unlike years previous, feels like they're deeper and has way more guys that can score all of a sudden, right? Like, I don't know what they're going to do with Domi when Marner returns, but all of a sudden, I think I've gone through the numbers. Now you've got outside of the top 4 guys, right? Got players that you think could score a big playoff goal: Bertuzzi, Domi, Nyes, I still think could end up potting one. McMahon could absolutely score a big goal. I'm not going to include the blue line because, there's not a lot of talent back there, but obviously Riley is one of them. But I could see, you know, Pontus Holmberg scoring them a big goal. I could see Yarncroc scoring them a big goal, right? Like, And Dewar, every time I see Dewar, like, he has 11 goals, I'm like, how did this happen? Because, it's incredible.
But those are the guys, once you get into a playoff series, we've talked about identity lines, like third lines or guys, like whether it's a Dewar, if you put Bobby McMahon with Knies and Holmberger, if you elevate Camp to the third line and you give Camp more of a third line role, shut down with a couple guys, if you bring Yarncroc back and you put him on like a third line shutdown, but give him a little boost of offense, there's a lot of combinations and things that they can work on. And they do definitely have a lot of guys that can score goals. Mm-hmm. They have a lot of guys that can play. Well, when we come back to it, are they going to utilize those guys in those situations to give them the ability to score those goals when the time matters? Or are they just going to lay on the hammer with four guys? I don't know. Track record from the past tells us it's not going to happen. Keefe has done a lot of good things, especially coming into the end of the season. Remember when everyone was asking for him to be fired and then all those guys got sick? He has started to realize that he has other good players in his lineup, and that's pretty much when the energy of the entire team started to flip, was it not? When he's like, holy cow, like, these guys can play hockey. So when the pressure comes and it's game six, and if Domi's having a good game, are you going to stuff him at 11 minutes or are you going to ride him for 18 that night? Those are the things, is like, as a coach, you need to have the guts to do it in the biggest moment, in the biggest game, and maybe ride guys that are going and not just go back to the well and be like, okay, it's up to these four, go do it.
I honestly don't know what they're going to do with Domi, though, moving forward here, because it's like when Mitch comes back, like, maybe you keep the top line of Domi, Matthews, Marner for a bit, and then you try a look of Bertuzzi, Tavares, Nylander again.
I don't mind putting Mitch on the third line.
It's not going to happen in the playoffs.
I know, but you could even have, or putting Nylander down and putting Tavares with Mitch, or having Nylander carry a third line with Knies and Camp. Now you give them some defensive guys with a guy like Camp. I know Holmberg's there, but I still feel Camp's role could be elevated to help have a shutdown line, but also maybe if you give them a little bit of offense with a Nylander or Marner, you're going to have these mismatches come playoff time, and then you can always load back up when you need it.
I think it's too cute. I think it's too cute. And here, the main thing, too, is it could never be Marner, because imagine the first time he tries to find Camp for a pass, and you're like, right.
It's got to be a Nylander. Like you say, he carries the puck more. He's more of a one-man show. He doesn't need line mates around him as much as a Mitch does.
Yeah.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, you're going to have to move these guys around to create mismatches to elevate other guys. But then you can also always go back to the well to load up. When it comes down to it, is he going to do it when it matters the most against Florida in game six or game seven? Yeah, and then you got to go against Boston or Tampa, who I think Tampa right now, I watched Tampa play the Islanders. Islanders looked like boys against men. Like, Tampa is rolling. They look good. And Kucherov's playing good. That would be one team right now I would not want to play. Dude. Like, if Boston plays Tampa first round, I guarantee Tampa's going to beat Boston almost. Dude. Like, they are looking good.
Vasilevsky last night.
Lights out.
It's like, oh, it's terrifying. Like, the save he made on Bertuzzi, I was like, oh, my God. That's the type of save where I feel like you're going to break a team in the playoffs, where you're like, oh, my God, this guy's going to end us. Like, we're just not going to be able to get one past him. Bobrovsky was in that mode, I think, last year for the Leafs, where and when we look back, we probably dismissed that a little, where the feeling about it from a team, when you just can't buy one from a guy, but that guy actually has name brand, like he's a pedigree player, has to be one of the hard – that's got to be the hardest thing in the playoffs.
Who does, if it ended today,
mentally,
does Tampa Bay play Boston or New York?
They don't come have back it in front of me, but I honestly couldn't tell you who they end up playing. But
I'm telling you, they would be the one team I would not want to play right now. They got a couple guys that have come in, Duclair, and I don't know when Sergachev's supposed to be back. They said that he should be back possibly in the first or second round. Like, this team is rolling now. They are rolling, and they're going to be a dangerous club. And if I'm Boston, they are not one team that I'd want to play. I'd want to play the Leafs over Tampa at this moment, just to see how these guys are playing in Tampa. And they also have the pedigree to get past teams. They know what it takes. A lot of these guys are playing at a high clip now.
And they have the benefit of, they didn't have another deep run last year, right? Like, they're not going to be as exhausted, right? Like, the last couple seasons, I think I had Dave Anderchuk on because he covers them. And I think I had him on last year ahead of the series. And I went, what's up with the feeling of burnout? And I actually had Maroon on too the year. And I was like, People are saying you guys are burnt out. It's like, oh, it's bulletin board material. But then they were losing a lot of games down the stretch, right? Like, they were kind of burning out. And I think that was two seasons in a row where
they were burning out.
Yeah.
Legit burnout.
Yeah. And I wonder if they feel just a little bit refreshed going, oh, you know what? We got bounced in the first round and we are still trying to make this happen. And there's got to be a bit of, I hate using this term, but it's got to be a little bit of Stamkos something to the room, right? It's their captain, it's their leader. He's still without a contract. Maybe approve it in the postseason, prove that these guys still have it and they're worth investing in. No, I'm with you. Yesterday, to me, watching that was big-time wake-up call of how dangerous Tampa's going to be if they get in. Like, it's the total don't let Tampa get hot. It's like, too late, they're hot.
They're hot. Yeah. I've watched that first period against the Islanders. I think the shots were 20-4 or 20-3, and the Islanders had a couple hope shots. That was it. It was wild just how good these guys were moving the puck, and every line was rolling. I mean, Nick Paul on the third line. They've got a very deep team right now. Hagel has almost 70 points. They got a ton of guys with a ton of goals all the way throughout their lineup, and they're just starting to feel good. So they're one team right now, like Boston. If you go Boston, Tampa first round, I am taking Tampa 10 times over. Not even a question at this moment, watching how they're playing and just knowing, like you said, they are refreshed and they look good.
Yeah, no, they do. I'm not giving Hagel any credit, though. He was supposed to do the show and then he bailed, so.
Oh, Hagel's my boy.
I know he is. That's why I said it. Yeah. And so I was like, maybe.
I'll get him on your show. Don't worry.
Maybe he just, you know, honors his commitments. Would be nice. Yeah, this would be good if he was just like, commit and then have me prep. You know, I prepare. I don't just go into these things with him. I'm not like, wasn't going
to
ask him like, so
I told
what'd
him
you
to
see
on
that play? That I wasn't going to ask one of those questions. I was going to ask a real question. It's fine. It's all right. You know, yeah. I won't forget. I won't forget. My last thing for you too. So you played with a guy who won a Selke. I was talking about with Merrick yesterday. It kind of is the respect award. Two guys?
Well, Taze and Kopitar.
Oh, right.
And then I was also with Bergeron at the start.
Yeah,
never played with Boston.
Yeah, you said Bergeron. That doesn't count. That is kind of, out of all the awards, I was curious, of all the awards the players respect the most, obviously Hart, but is Selke two?
Well, I mean, how many teams win Stanley Cups with Selke winners?
Yeah, that's what I want to know.
There's a lot of them. Yeah. Those guys are insanely important. They drive the bus at both ends of the rink. Coaches know that doesn't matter who's on the ice at any given time. They're five-tool hockey players in the sense of they can penalty kill at a high rate. They can be on the power play. They score big goals, 6-on-5. They can kill games, 5-on-6. They're power play drivers. They drive the whole bus on every facet of the game. Their fingerprints are on every facet. And when you have guys that, you look at Kane, like Kane is the most important player when it comes to clutch time and stuff like that, but he wasn't penalty killing when at the end of a game, or he wasn't on at a 6-on-5 or 5-on-6 at the end of games, right? In the big moments and certain times. So those guys that can do it all are insanely important, and they just do it with such poise. I remember we're in a playoff game with Kopitar, and the puck comes rimmed around the boards, and most guys would just chip it out. He does like a fake clapper, holds it, toe drags the guy, and shoots it down the ice, and it like wins the game. Like, those are just plays that these guys make all over the ice, whether it's 5-on-5, shorthanded, and they just drive the bus. They're so important to their teams. They're important to the league. They're important for young players to watch as well.
Yeah. So it sounds like, based on your answer, though, that Matthews no PK disqualifies him, eh?
Well, yeah, I would say so. I would say so. Just because it's a defensive-minded award, is it not? I mean,
yes.
John Madden won it for 4 years, but he never had the offense. It looks like you have to have the offense now on top of the defense in order to get that award. You know, Datsyuk was winning it and all these guys. It kind of changed the way the award was given out later on, just because you're going to have to score and also defend. And you're going to have to do it in every facet of the game. Now, Matthews will be on a 5-on-6 or in those situations. But if you're not penalty killing, I think that is a big part of the award. I would say.
Yeah.
I don't know.
No, well, here's the thing. I think it's evolved over time because, like, I had Merrick on, and he's a historian of the game, and he basically was like, yeah, they needed to create an award for Bob Gainey. And you go, okay, so then, because Gainey was a winger and good goal scorer, not prolific, though, and good two-way player, but it's just, I think at that point it was, who is the best defensive forward, right? And yeah. Then the award has evolved into now what I think is the best two-way center. That's the award. Because, yeah, a winger hasn't won since 2003.
Well, Hossa should have won, yeah, but he was a winger, that. But they couldn't give it to him.
Yeah.
But so he was the guy at every facet of the game, too. Right. But he was a winger, but they couldn't give it to him.
Right, but I guess this is kind of where I'm going with it is the award has evolved. It hasn't stayed static. And my feeling with Matthews is, like, I get you. It doesn't feel right having a guy not kill penalties, but it's obvious why he doesn't. Like, could Austin Matthews kill penalties better than Dewar? I believe so, yes. I
just, 100% it could, yeah.
Yeah, duh. I think this is clearly a situation where the guy is so dominant 5-on-5. Like, we're talking about the number one goal scorer 5-on-5 since he entered the NHL. This is a guy who's going to maybe score 70 goals this year. So you burning 2 minutes of that on a penalty kill every night is obviously ridiculously dumb deployment. And so you look at everything else, like his takeaways, his giveaways, the way that he forechecks, the pressure that he puts on opposing defenses, like the like every metric essentially that we measure defensive forward, he checks all the boxes.
There should be anomalies for the award.
That's what I'm saying. Is I kind of feel like, yeah, listen, he's going to struggle from the fact that he's in the same era now as Barkov, just like guys struggled with Bergeron before the what's going to be, I think, the Barkov era of winning this award. But like, I just feel as though Matthews is really going to struggle from the no PK stuff when in reality he's a new thing. He's something we just haven't seen before. A guy that's this good defensively, this good two-way, but is just so impossibly dangerous 5-on-5 and on the power play that you can't give him penalty kill time. Like, it's just unjustifiable.
What is the checklist for this award? What is the checklist? Like, when these voters, yeah, like the idiot voter who voted against Connor McDavid, like, uh-huh, that guy should be thrown off the ballot, never allowed to vote again. He's an idiot. What is the checklist for these voters?
That's what I've been trying to figure out.
So I don't know the checklist.
Well, the one of them is very clear. It's penalty
valid,
kill.
If you're giving valid reasoning, mm-hmm, as like you said, like takeaways, plus minus, mm-hmm, defensive zone face-off, stuff like that, is that part of the checklist?
Yes, for sure.
And
it
if
is.
He's doing it, yeah, I know. Yeah. But if he's doing that at a better, higher clip than everyone else, then obviously he should be put into that category.
Yeah, yeah. That's
now going back to these voters. A lot of them just feel like they should vote just to pick someone else to be different.
Yeah. Well,
rather than just pick the best guy.
Here's my only pushback to the thing, because I actually think when we look at Matthews, I'm like, hey, let's maybe diminish the penalty kill stuff for this one guy, and then the scary part is I don't want to diminish that rule. Like, I wouldn't want to live in a world where all of a sudden, year over year, like someone, it's okay to me when a guy who scores 70 goals doesn't kill penalties, right? It's not going to be as fun 5 years from now. Like, what does Barkov have, actually? Like, how many goals does...
I have no idea.
Yeah, no, I'm going to look it up right now. As Barkov this season has 22 goals, okay?
What about Kopitar again?
Yeah. What,
he's,
this
he's
year?
Right there. Like, he's got... what, 75 points, 80 points?
Yeah.
Does he not?
Yeah, no, yeah, he's got 66 points this year. He's got 26 goals. Yeah, but
I thought he was higher than that.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, though, is, okay, it's the best two-way forward. All of a sudden, you're getting into a dangerous precedent, I understand, of saying, well, this guy has so many goals and so much offense, and you're like, oh, damn, so now we're adding offense to the defensive award. Like, it's a tricky one. I get it. It's not black and white, and I don't like removing penalty kill. I just... every night I watch Matthews, and every night I watch him just go and strip pucks off guys, I'm like, oh, yeah, but he does his best defensive work in the offensive zone. And I watch Barkov, and I go, I don't think that you guys are, like, night and day different in terms of your defensive ability.
5-on-5, they're not.
Yeah.
No. 5-on-5, they're not.
That's what I'm saying, and that's why, like, the way people talk about Barkov and the way they revere him, and I'm not scouting, I have a professionalized eye like some other people, but I, like, sure, you want to tell me Barkov's better? Fine. I don't believe that Matthews is materially worse. And I do feel as though if Matthews was getting even a minute a night on the penalty kill, that people would be actually pushing the ballot. He's also probably, in my estimation, suffering a little bit from the Toronto stuff, because my guess is there are a lot of voters who don't want to vote for a Leafs guy like that, the 70 goal scorer. They look at it and say, this guy's got enough. We don't need to shine more light on Austin Matthews. because he plays for the Maple Leafs and he's going to score 70 goals. We're going to give it to Barkov. You know, like if it was an even split, I think that's the way most people would go, even if they wouldn't admit it publicly.
Yeah, there should be a known checklist of exactly what is needed in order to win this award, because then if you pick a Matthews, then it changes the award again.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah, that's what I mean. It's tough.
It is tough, but there should be a known checklist of what is the bare minimum needed in order to win this award. So we know, as you know, viewers of the game, just again back to the idiot who voted against Connor McDavid, the one guy, right? It's like
that was.
Yeah, I don't even think it came out because he should be. No, I don't think it did, but he should be kicked off every ballot.
Like, I hope this person doesn't work here. I'm just like dragging him.
He should be. He should be kicked off every ballot for voting. If you're voting on a guy that was against a guy that was instrumentally better in every category, but if he has a checklist that we don't know about that he's all because of this little plus minus, he was minus. You know, he was plus 12 and this guy was plus 14, but he gets the MVP. I don't know. So when it comes to these voting, there's no real known reason for why some players get the award. It's just like, okay, let's leave it up to the voters and vote.
I can't believe that this guy has a vote, but all right. Like, I think it's easier to get a vote.
Why does he get a vote and what was his reasoning? He should have to come out. With the reasoning.
I think he probably did because he works for something called Off the Post Radio and a place called NHLDraftBuzz.com. But I'm like, that seems like light criteria to get these.
That's what I'm saying. So that's where, like, if these voters have so much influence on these awards that actually matter, they matter for the history of the game.
Here's my thing, though. They've gotten the Selke. Like, you look at the list of Selke winners and it's not like there's a guy that stands out and you're like, how did that guy win? You know, like, it's pretty... It's like, this is the list. Bergeron, Barkov, Couturier, O'Reilly, Kopitar, Bergeron, Taves, Bergeron, Kessler, Datsuk, Brindamore, Draper, Lehtinen, Pekka, Madden, Yzerman. Like, it's, keep going.
Yeah, it's legit, guys. Yeah,
like, they keep nailing it. So it's, you know, and this is, it's the ultimate, this is the thing about the award, too. It's the ultimate, like, no one really knows because the criteria isn't as obvious, but... You give it to the guy that everyone's respected, that's an awesome two-way player that we know is an awesome two-way player, and no one's going to bat an eye, you know? Like, it's basically the who's the most respected player award. It really is. Or who you have to be incredibly respected to win that award. No one's going to, like, jump out of the blue and win that thing, ever.
No.
It's never going to be a name where you're like, who is that? It's not going to be one of those ones.
Anyways. I would have loved Hossa to win it, though.
Yeah.
Just playing with him and knowing what he did and, and being a winger, that's one guy that I still feel should have won that award.
Yeah, but like I said, it's no longer a winger award, unfortunately. That's one of the criteria that is completely out.
And I do understand the taking faceoffs.
But that's it. It's like, you're right. What are the criteria and how do they evolve? Christopher Stieg. Again, created the Clever app. Go download the Clever app. It's right there for you for free in the App Store. You can go download it. Go check it out. And yes, now Quench, which I'm waiting for my samples.
We'll be sending you some stuff.
I'll be waiting for my packs, and it will become my drink of the show. I'm very excited to try it. Hey, buddy, thanks for the time. We'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, take care.
See you, pal. Christopher Stieg. Quench is with a C, by the way. Starting to see all the influencers start to do it. I'm like, what is this? Gonna have some. Hopefully soon. Anyways, take a quick break. Arguably the worst Toronto season ever.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
I'm gonna carry this over into the next block. Because I don't have enough time. I got Sixero coming up, and here's my guess is that he's feeling some of these frustrations as well. He's gonna out frustrate me. He will do a better job at being frustrated than I could ever be.
Which is saying something, because I think you're pretty good at it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's more about his talent level. I actually, you know, I got a funny Sid story before he comes on. It's like, I had him in before one of the TFC playoffs, and this was like when I was first starting, and he just like dominated. Like, he went in there and he just like crushed it out of the park. And it was before they had won the championship, be talking about like their stakes and their need to win and the passion that he spoke with and the elocution, all the different stuff. And I remember sitting there going, I've only sat with a couple of guys who do this job where I've gone, damn, I'm just never going to be able to do it that good. Damn. Like, McCown was one where I remember sitting and watching McCown and going, when he was on his A game, it was just like, no, can't ever touch that. Like, never going to be able to run it up on the radar gun like that. And then Sid's definitely one, too. He's one as well.
And but I've worked with as well.
You is dead last. Hold on. I'm going to do Raptors on the other side of break before Sid. Quick break, and then I'm going to come back. I'm going to talk about, oh, my God, Raptors, please. All right, Sid Sixero in a couple of minutes to do a better job than me. I know a lot of you aren't aware of what the Raptors are doing right now because you're trying to... Well, literally anything is a better use of your time. So you're trying to, I don't know, maintain your sanity, do something actually entertaining, do something actually worthwhile.
I watched a lot of that game last night for some reason.
Like you were at work.
Yeah, but like it was on one of my main TVs for some reason.
For work.
Well, sure, but I mean, I could have had anything else on.
You should have done that.
I know. I don't know what I was thinking.
They lost.
I was just going to say, at a certain point, it was just like watching like a train wreck. I was just too, I was dialed.
Raptors have lost 15 games in a row. 15 games in a row. Yeah. 15.
Sorry, how many?
Yeah. 15 games in a row. Three of the losses during that span have been three of the seven worst losses they've ever suffered as a franchise from a point differential standpoint. Like, so, like, getting just completely browbeat into submission. And you could say, well, JD, it's a different era where there's more scoring. And I go, okay, fine. Yeah. You lost 15 in a row, and three of them have been the worst that you've ever suffered. So, not really loving that. They lost last night 133 to... 85. This is like this is a whole other level of tanking what they're doing right now. Yeah, they've had injuries. They've had to hold guys out of the lineup. They've had some really, you know, they were hit with tragedy with RJ Barrett. They've had to navigate a really difficult season. But it's at this point, it's very clear. You know, they're signing guys to start for them that play for Sioux Falls. Blake Murphy's doing write-ups on guys who, frankly, he's doing write-ups, articles that are purely for the parents. It's like, you know, when you would be like on a fake Time magazine as a kid and they would have like a little plaque in your room? Blake is essentially writing that content right now, Raptors-wise, where this is purely for a parent to print out and frame because... I don't think any of us are going to spend much time focusing on Malik Williams and what his trajectory is going to be with the Toronto Raptors after averaging 10 points in Sioux Falls. I really do think that the NBA specifically, like it's a tough one. They would never do it, but like there should almost be a clause where if you are not playing a certain amount of NBA roster players, a certain amount of minutes, like when you're in a full tank like this, something's got to be done financially because, like, this isn't fair that you would have bought a ticket to go see a team like this. And I willingly did it, but at least I went to go see Shea, and part of the appeal with the NBA is to be doing that. But this is, like, borderline criminal that people have paid tickets or paid money to see what this Raptors team is. This is the money-back night. Like, these are money-back nights the way that the Raptors are playing right now. You better bring in incredible halftime entertainment. Like, bring in the guy with the chihuahua that does tricks every night, not just Fridays.
Yeah.
Because this is abhorrent what they're doing.
Get Red Panda in. Get the stars in.
Here's the thing. I went through all of the Raptors' poor seasons last night. I went through every single one of them. And right now what is happening is the worst thing that has happened since the inaugural couple of seasons when the NBA basically had broken rules against the Toronto Raptors. They, you know, were playing in the Rogers Center, non-NBA arena. But since they moved to Scotiabank. This is the worst that it's ever been, by my estimation, looking through the teams. Like, one is that they're probably going to have, just an unbelievable losing, like the worst losing percentage, basically, since the 90s. I don't know if they're going to win another game this year. It seems like almost far-fetched to believe that they will. Maybe they get one, but I would set the total right now at 1.5. Like if the Raptors, at a 0.5. Raptors, 0.5 wins. That's what you're kind of aiming for right now. One more win to close the season, and God, pray for whoever that ends up happening to. But this is the most depressing one because you've got this... You've got a team that is not playing any NBA talent. And much like that was the Florida season, the Tampa season, right? Except for here's the difference. It's here. Mm-hmm. So people are going and mm-hmm. spending ticket money versus the when it was in Tampa. People were like, yeah, we can just put out of sight, out of mind. We got a lot of stuff going on. There's a global pandemic and Raptors had a bunch of things befall them. But at least there were some happy moments during that season. At least people liked that team. It was year one of the struggles. This is now into multiple seasons of painful Raptors experiences, right? The one thing that you sort of had was the joy of getting to watch Scotty Barnes. He's removed from the mix. He ends up getting hurt. You don't get to see any Scotty Barnes. You make a trade, a couple of trades actually, that are supposed to inject a few players onto this roster that are going to be fun and entertaining that you'll see a bunch of. You don't really get to see much of them. And frankly, like, yeah, I think that the Raptors quickly, RJ trade is going to be fine eventually, but I don't think that you've seen too many even flashes when those guys have played of, oh, wow, this is like unbelievably encouraging for the future. Like this is set that they've got their 1-2-3. I think it feels a little bit more to me like they've got their, 2-3-4. But the worst part of this is that you can't tank. You can't tank your way into a meaningful draft pick or a meaningful player. There's no optimism around the corner. Like, when the Raptors were tanking in Tampa, it was a loaded top of the draft. Like, yeah. Barnes fell to them at 4. Suggs went 5. Wagner was in that draft. Like, there were a bunch of different players. This year's draft is guys you can't even watch who are playing in Europe and Australia. And you say, I'm not familiar with these players. Or it's older centers that are in the tournament right now who, frankly, are not going to inspire a lot of fun or confidence or interest, or massive projects that you're kind of hoping become role players. So you look at all of this and this is as ugly as it's ever been. Like, for a franchise that has had a lot of ugly memories. Like, when I went through some of those teams, I went through, it was like 2012, 13, I want to say. Horrible team, 30 wins, 27 wins. They've had some embarrassing seasons. And I'm not talking like the very beginning, because again, the very beginning of the expansion franchise almost needs to be thrown out because it's not fair to do. It's not fair to evaluate them against a team that has, I think this is season 29 for the Toronto Raptors. Like, you can't compare the two of them. Modern day Raptors, or once they've got their feet set Raptors, this is as worse and this is bad and depressing as it's ever been. Like, that is... You can tank, you can lose games. Losing by this many points and rolling out the rosters that they're rolling out, all with the hopes of getting a 6th overall pick in a nightmare draft. Whew. Anyways, Toronto Sports on fire right now. Leafs doing right. There's a lot of hope. You can put a lot of your hope in the Leafs because that's historically worked out extremely well. Sid Sixero, Breakfast Television. What's up, brother? How we doing?
I'm in a mood, man.
Yeah, no, that's why I want to have you on today.
timing could not have worked out better here.
Yeah, okay.
For you and me.
Yeah.
Like, this is...
I wanted to have you on last because I wanted to be like, hey, Conn Smythe, and I want to talk about, the Daryl Sittler and Tiger Williams talking and how it kind of inspired me to think about playing Toronto sports and pride in sports and what it means. And now it's like, it's completely shifted. I don't care about you prepping for your speeches and how you did a good job. It's done. It's
nor, just, nor yeah. should you yeah, with respect.
Yeah, I know.
Your show.
I did though. I watched you up there. I was at the dinner. I'm sitting there, my producer Armin covered in his own wine that he spilt all over himself. Cause he got so excited that it was an open bar. He's like, okay, I guess I just have all the red wine. I was like, yeah, probably pace yourself. Nope. He was gone by 10. But for those of us that didn't drink themselves into an embarrassing stupor, we enjoyed watching you speak. But yeah, no, that's done now. Nobody cares. We've moved on. It's about Toronto
sports. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
But I did hear, I liked the line that I think you said to Sammy on the first Leafs post game after. You referenced the Conn Smythe and Daryl Sittler speech, and I'm paraphrasing the host of this show, mm-hmm. but you said you know the current Leafs, you got to care more. you got to care like that. You got to care like I was talking to Tiger Williams after mm-hmm. the event, and I said to him, "What you are doing publicly, yourself and Daryl and Lanny McDonald, mm-hmm. and when you talk about each other and you talk about Boria." Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't know you guys felt that way about each other.
No, neither did I. Like I said, I was getting uber emotional. Like,
it's a gift they are giving mm-hmm. us because they don't have to.
Mm-hmm.
But we're seeing it play out in real time. And obviously with that health scare with Lanny like 7 weeks ago, it's amazing to watch. And it was just a great night to be a part of. And I'd be honored to do it again. Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Yeah. I think you did a fine job, buddy. Now tell me what you're frustrated about. That's enough on you. Now time for the other.
Enough about me.
Yeah, enough about you.
So, two things.
Yeah.
One, I still don't know why Mitch Marner was that angry at the media the other day.
Mm. Okay.
That's still stuck in my craw that I need to kind of air out.
Okay.
Two, so Sheldon Keefe during the morning skate yesterday mm-hmm. is saying we got to watch Austin and it's not about the chase. And he plays over 20 minutes for, like, the first time in how many games?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't like that at all. I don't mind the loss. It is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
But, this Austin story is not going to get pleasant by the end of it, I think.
Mm. So
because
I talked about
if he
this.
If he gets close,
mm-hmm.
what is the priority? Like, I did agree with Coach Keefe yesterday when he said, look, we got to get everyone ready. I didn't see someone getting ready yesterday. I saw 21 minutes when you probably didn't need it.
Mm.
So I'm... That annoyed me a little bit. Uh-huh. That's kind of talking to both sides of your mouth to the media, and now I'm confused.
Yeah, okay.
Now I'm confused.
Let me start with the Matthews one, because I talked about it with Versteeg earlier, because I basically asked him from a player's perspective how they would be viewing this chase, and he said kind of a similar thing where he's like, how they handle it is going to be kind of interesting because you really don't want him worn out going into the postseason chasing this. But to me, my position is this. One, I think him getting 70 goals actually – matters a lot. Like, I think it matters in terms of the success they're going to have. The team is most confident and looks the best when Matthews is scoring a ton of goals, and they have something that is keeping them engaged going into the postseason. I don't think he's going to play the final game of the year unless he's sitting on 69 goals. And I think that the upside of having the team play for something, having Matthews feeling at his very best and feeling this confident and getting an opportunity to do something that hasn't happened since the 90s is like mostly a positive. As long as you make sure what you said is true, that you're not over dialing the minutes, that you're not doing it. So, okay, you get your game every once in a while here down the stretch where you hit the 20-minute mark. But for the most part, I want to see... 18 minutes a night, 17 minutes a night for Austin Matthews. And I think that like establishing that and having him do it under those parameters is actually going to be very important. So I agree with you because it can turn ugly. And we talked about this earlier too, which is if you score 70 or you come up short of 70 and then you go into the postseason and you don't score goals, you're right. Then that 70, 69, 68, whatever the hell it is, becomes something that people don't look back on in pride or with pride.
No, I would agree with that. Now, but again, like, I want to make this clear. I think you let him play, and I think you play him the way you've normally played him. Why? Because load management is irrelevant in this league.
Yeah.
Why it's relevant in game 81 and 82 when it hasn't been relevant on back-to-back nights the entire season
mm-hmm.
is something I can't quite wrap my head around.
Mm.
So let the kid play.
Yeah.
And I still didn't agree with when Mitch Marner was sitting on 99 points a couple seasons back. I didn't agree with that. Let the kid play. Like I don't know why it's relevant at a certain point when it's never relevant. I don't want to put you on the spot, JD. Who's that last game against for Toronto in the regular season?
Who Tampa.
Tampa. Okay.
Yeah, it's Florida.
If it was
Tampa
like a Florida Boston Rangers thing, I'm like, don't let him go out there and let someone just slash like Leon Draisaitl his wrist or something.
Yeah.
Like, don't do that. Don't give them that opportunity. But I don't know. I just think like. I listen, 8 goals in 8 games, 7 goals in 7 games, not easy. Mm-mm. But the kid's like a machine, so I just mm-hmm. this has given us something amazing to watch, considering there's really nothing to watch with the Leafs right now.
No.
And everyone knows what the deal is. So I want to thank Austin Matthews for this.
Correct.
But it could end in a bizarre way,
yep.
which could be consistent with how a lot of things go with this hockey club. I hope not. Mm-hmm. I hope he gets 70, a clean 70, and everything's amazing. But we shall see.
You know what, I think that this is – I don't think it's unique to Toronto sports fans necessarily, but I do think that this is part of the psyche of just tortured fan bases is – even 70 goals, even the chase for 70 goals, right? Which is like unfathomable. Like my whole life as a Leaf fan, I never thought I would see somebody like this. Like, you know, in my lifetime, like my recent life, I have been unbelievably excited for a line of Nikolai Kuhlman and Clark MacArthur and Mikhail Grabowski. Like that truly brought me immense joy, like true joy. And now I'm watching a guy hit 70 goals, and I have the same thoughts as that you do, and I'm going like, how will this thing that's so great, obviously, turn into something that will torture me? And that's it. Like, that's just where we are in deep doomcast mode. And the other sports teams in the city right now, I think, are all helping bleed into that. Like, they all bleed into one another in terms of some of the fan trauma. But there's nothing like being a Leaf fan right now where you go, hey, how is 70 goals going to suck? And we figured it out immediately.
How is this going to taste like the what's the cough syrup? Taste awful, but it works.
Buckley's, yeah.
But like, how are we going to Buckley's this moment?
Yeah. Yes.
Where we all hold our nose to this glorious historic chase this young man
Correct.
Is doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's very.
But I think if your opinion is not what yours is, where you're nervous about it, then I don't think you like truly care about the team, or you're missing like a part of your brain. Like I think that that's one of those two. Like you had a lobotomy and people like nobody told you. And you're just out there in the real world being like, be positive. And you're like, who is that person? I don't understand what that is. Like, I don't know what that, I don't understand.
But I to be a fly on the wall for those conversations.
Uh huh.
Because Austin Matthews is not dumb enough to have his actual opinions on this leak.
Uh huh.
He's not, I don't think he's that guy with the media.
I think his actual opinion is shown when he's ripping as many pucks as he can from all angles.
And shots on goal at the end of the night. Yeah.
That's letting you know what the opinion is. When he's like, shoot. And when 100%. His teammates are looking off breakaways and open nets to try to find him, I think that the opinion of the room is pretty clear that 70 is going to mean something. If I was him, if I was doing this from a pure HR standpoint, PR, whatever, I would tell him to actually sit one of the back-to-back that's coming up here. They play a back-to-back on the 8th and 9th. They play Pittsburgh the one night, and then they play the Devils. The problem is like, that's kind of a good opportunity to score goals. But I would say, man, if you sit on one of those nights, then we can kind of push you down the stretch because you're always going to be able to say, hey, I load managed one of those ones, and I put the team before me, and that's on the record, and it's done early.
If I play him against Pittsburgh, and if he doesn't get one there, you sit him against New Jersey.
Yeah,
if he doesn't get
like
one
that.
Against Pittsburgh, it's got to be super consistent at this point. Obviously, mm-hmm. if he hits a roadblock in that game or this weekend, or like I think that's the Jersey game's a perfect time to do it. 100%. That's what I would do.
My true feeling on it though is just go for it. Like go for it. Pedal the metal.
Every
go.
Game.
Yep.
Suit him every game.
Yep. Suit him every game. Go for it. Like be damned. I'm very much like. I'll never forget the Colts having the opportunity to go 16-0 and then playing Curtis Painter, and then it completely derailed their season. And I just feel like that there is more chance of that happening with this group, in my opinion. The idea of them getting really cute and managing Matthews' minutes and sitting him and telling him like team, and taking your goal scorer, your best player, your heart nominee, your Selke nominee out of his rhythm. And screwing it up before the playoffs, then there is like that cross check or that slash across the wrist that ends up hurting him and derailing him. Like, I get it. We live in fear of those things happening. We're terrified of like the year the Patriots put Wes Welker out there and he tries to run a slant route and he tears his knees up and you go, oh my God, it screws up the Patriots season. They played him in a meaningless game 17. What's Belichick doing? But I think that the juice is worth the squeeze on this one. And I think that there would be nothing better than having the Leafs go into the postseason where Matthews pops 70 goals. The team is going crazy about it. The city's on fire because of the chase. They roll that momentum in the postseason. They kick somebody's teeth in round one. That's what I want to see.
We got in studio tomorrow here on BT, shameless plug, JD,
oh,
if you'll allow me.
Yes.
We have on the couch Rick Vibe, Wendell Clark, and Daryl Sutler.
Oof.
For the Baycrest charity event. I might. Off camera, I might.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I'll keep it together.
Dude, I almost cried twice during that dinner. Like, I...
Almost. Didn't, hold on. You came close to crying. That's your bar. Close to emotion.
No, I... buddy, I would have fully wept had I not been thinking, I don't want to look like an idiot weeping at like hockey players I didn't watch play talking about what it meant to be a Toronto Maple Leaf and brotherhood.
You would not have been alone that night.
Like, yeah, I know it's true, but I just, I was trying to keep it together, and it was hard. Yeah. Like, you know when your throat is burning and you're like, don't, like, if I say one word, it's going to be waterworks. That's where I was at, where I was like,
don't,
I can't
let Armin see me. Like,
Armin was gone. I had already put him in a cab, but he never even got that far in the evening. Like, I'm talking about, he showed up at 6 o'clock and was like, so this is free. And then the rest is history.
So I'm sorry. My point was, I'm going to talk about the event, but the one hockey question I'm going to ask him is this, is 70 and what it means and what would it have meant? Like, just their perspective of that. I'm curious how they're thinking this through. So that'll be tomorrow on Breakfast Television.
I would say that I'm going to watch, but I'll be doing this show.
You will be working.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I have an excuse. I will watch it though after. Okay. Put it up on the internet so that I can watch the clips. So the Marner thing, you said that one too. I saw the quote and I reacted. I watched the video. I felt slightly different. Did you have the same reaction?
It reads harsher than it comes off on the video, but the video's still awkward.
Agree. That's the thing. People kept going, watch the video, watch the video, watch the video. And I went, you know, had I watched the video, my tweet probably wouldn't have been so forceful. I agree, but I'm not a delete tweet guy, and I wasn't going to start being like, here's the thing, actually, the nuance. I was like, no, this is done, all right? Move it along. Nobody cares. But ultimately, I just... My thought just remains this. He so clearly cares about what the media has to say. And this has been a story with him like time and time again. And we're in year 8 of Mitch Marner. And I just wish that he could, you know, not shoot himself in the foot with any of this stuff. Like, just get through it without saying something like that. Just get through it by saying, I'm not going to talk about my injury. Bang. Like, it's over. You know, as soon as you start doing the you guys, and he did it already this season too, everyone gets their back up and is like, dude, you don't have your priorities straight. Like, I don't know why people haven't been able to communicate that to him. Like, don't say you guys ever. Like, take that out of your vocabulary. Just stop it.
Well, he better tighten up, because it's not like he's going to come back and be on fire. Like, the guy was bound for a while. Like, let's be honest. So, but like, I didn't. Okay, I'm asking you a legit question, because I'm not as in the world as I used to be. Is there any debate as to how he hurt himself?
No.
Like, he was backing up. It was behind the net. Yeah. It was a fluke thing, and it just kind of happened, right? Yep. Like, that's, I'm not missing anything with the story.
No.
Then what is his deal? Like, is he mad that Dreger reported it? Is that his issue?
I think this is a case of a guy who wants to try to show that he doesn't care, but it shows how much he cares, right? So he's trying to be like, he's basically trying to be cool, being like, he's trying to lay back, smoke a cig, and go, say whatever you guys want. You know, that's all he's trying to do. Say whatever you want. I'm moving forward. But instead, he's like, you guys, and he stammers through it, and he doesn't know how to do it. He doesn't know how to be cool. And then it comes out, and you're like, what did you just say? And people look around, and they're like, so we have to be the ones that interpret that in a good, okay spin for you? It's something about the playoffs. You don't want people to know what your injury is? Like, okay, I guess so. That's where I'm at with it. I just think it's, a guy who he's just really tough with the media. Like, I think he's just not good at it. It's not his forte. He's good at passing the puck. He's good at entering the zone. He's horrific at speaking at a podium. The second you see him at a podium, it's like, you know, when people tell you they can't believe what you do because they have a fear of public speaking, and they go, man, like, that's actually scarier to me than anything. And you're like, I don't even understand this, because I'm comfortable in front of a microphone. For him, he's that. Like, he's one of those people that is coming up to you saying that.
Yeah, no, that's a very succinct way to put it with him. I just, the reason it concerns me is because, like, the only guy I've seen kind of get into it with the media consistently in the playoffs and still play well is Brad Marchand. Huh. unless there's another name I'm missing.
I don't know.
Like that's the only guy I've seen kind of have a to and fro with the media and still excel and win multiple rounds.
Yeah, but his is cool where he's like, I don't care. And we're like, we believe you.
We believe it.
With him, I'm like, and he's like, I don't care. I'm like, I've never believed anything less.
But we know it's a different it's a different deal with Mitch in this market, and he's from here. And it's like there's a lot of great things that come with it, like 10.9 mil a year. But there's some other things that come with it.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was with you in that. Like I saw your response to that on Twitter, and I was like, I was just kind of laying low on Twitter for a while. But I completely agreed with you. You do not delete that tweet.
No,
that is an issue. If people don't think that's an issue, they don't get it. I've been in those scrums. I've dealt with players. I've dealt with one of the wildest Leaf teams ever, with like Corson, Roberts, Sundin, all of them. Those guys, those questions stick with players. Media affects players. Maybe Nylander's the only guy I've seen who clearly is oblivious to it, and I believe it with him. But it's not just winning those games come the middle of this month. It's that every day. So you got to deal with the stuff on the ice that gets more intense. And you got to deal with the stuff off the ice. It gets more intense. Those scrums are only growing with every round. Then the news people show up. Then the cameras that haven't been around show up. Then the folks who don't know like what you like to be asked and what you don't like to be asked, they just throw it at you. That's all real. And I get a little concerned when on something as innocent as how are you feeling, everyone's got their back up. I think that's a problem. I think that will hurt you. I think it's a focus thing. He's one of the best players in the league. Shake it off, man. Like I thought it was a really strange moment. And I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt because what he's coming back from is not easy. It's not an easy high ankle sprain. But it's the other thing I was just like, I'm glad you tweeted that out, JB, because I agreed with you 100%. And it goes back to, we could spend the next hour and a half on the media and the Leafs in the city. But you got to shake off some stuff here, man.
Sure, but
you got to shake it off.
I actually, it's funny because I don't think that the media is like, I think that they've kind of invented a boogeyman. And you know this because you know media people, and there are some people in media that are the same, where they like invent boogeymen, right? And you're like, that's not real. Like, you don't need that. And they kind of like obsess over stuff, whether it's like the people who tweet at them or, you know, a rival, whatever. It's just, it becomes like an obsessive thing. And I think that for Mitch, that's just been something always, is that his version of like us against the world, which is like a very common athlete mentality, manifested itself into you versus the media. And I think a lot of it was from when they struggled in the playoffs to start, but also when he signed the contract and people were blown away that he made the 10.9. And instead of realizing that it was like, that was the entire market reacting that way, it got turned into, well, that's the media, that's the media, that's the media. And for him, I think that when he's playing the game, he's not thinking about the media. I think he can compartmentalize then. But I do think that the stuff outside of it gets in a little bit easier with him. And where that shows up will always be a point of curiosity for me with his career and whether or not he can handle it. Because you're right, some guys can hack that pressure. Some guys, it becomes something that they get obsessive with. And my understanding of him, and this isn't just through this instance, this is like basically since the contract, is that he's always had a difficult time or a more difficult time than his peers on this team during this time at shutting that stuff out or dismissing it and just going like, hey, who cares what this person wrote about my night? I'm not going to think about it for longer than the 5 seconds that it crosses my phone screen.
Like, I agree with you. And you know, we're talking about managing minutes a lot with the Leafs. I think there should be legit conversation internally. And there may be. There might be. But I would assume there's talks about which guys you throw out in front of the media during this postseason and how often.
Yeah, for sure. But they don't try to throw him out there too often. Because they know.
But people ask for Mitch. Like, I get it. But I think, but look, give him, like, Max Domi's pretty good with the media.
Yeah.
Like, not a lot, phases Max.
No.
Tyler Bertuzzi doesn't seem like it's phased by much in front of a camera. And you know, like, Austin's pretty, like, I just think it's a grind everywhere is what we got to remember. And we don't talk about it enough.
Yeah.
And give Mitch some days where it's not him in the scrum. And I think he'd be fine with it.
Yeah.
And I think it might help him because he's going to need some time. And I don't think it's a nothing issue. I know some people are going to listen to this going, it's a typical Toronto. No.
Yeah, whatever.
These are things you got to manage.
Yeah.
Unless you've been in it, you have no idea what you're talking about.
Hey, guess what? We can't be critical of Marner being too obsessed with what other people say and then us couch what we're doing by being too worried about what other people say. That just seems stupid.
Yeah, we can't play that game.
I was like, we got to let it fly if we're going to be letting it fly about this. Okay, so I got a bunch of other things for you. One is about Stephon Diggs. One is about Vince Carter, and one is about the Blue Jays. Where do you want to go? Because we're not going to have time for all three.
Quickly on Diggs, it was time.
Okay, yeah.
It was time. I read the one thing that just hit me in the face yesterday was how many cap penalties they're going to get hit with doing this now.
Oh, yeah.
I couldn't believe that.
Hold on, I have it in front of me because I actually kept this one in the notes. $31 million against your cap next year.
And what was the date to wait? Like June 1st or July 1st?
Yeah. So, and then
insane how they didn't care about that. They just wanted to get his ass out.
Yeah. Andrew Brandt tweeted that the Packers' 9 wide receivers, by comparison, will count for $11 million on the cap next year.
That's a tremendous number.
Yeah.
So I want to shout. You know what? And I also want to shout out Malachi Flynn.
Okay. Hold on. I want to get there. But sorry. I want to stick the Bills thing for 1 second.
Go ahead.
Can you name the Bills' 4 receivers right now?
Can I name the Bills' 4 receivers?
Yeah, they got 4 receivers on the roster right now. Can you name them?
That's Gabe Davis and Stephon Diggs.
Yep, they're gone. I could have gotten one.
As a tight end?
Named one, by the way. Before yesterday, I was not aware that three of them.
Who do you got on the roster right now?
I knew Khalil Shakir. That was the only guy I knew, right? So I knew him.
I had some catches.
Here are the other 3 guys that will be playing with him, barring some draft picks, which I'm sure they're going to bring in some draft picks. But it's Mac Hollins, formerly of that one time with the Raiders where he caught a touchdown pass and then people were like, oh, he's tall. And then he went to the Falcons, I think, and was kind of irrelevant. KJ Hamler, famous from doing nothing in Denver. And Curtis Samuel, who was with Washington for a while and, every once in a while, had a game. 0 guys that have ever been owned on more than, you know, when you see them in your fantasy league, like owned by percentage, it's like 5%.
Well, but with that said, I think we all at one point owned Hamler, with respect.
Yeah, because people thought Russ was going to be great. So at the very beginning, but then he literally, that's his legacy, is that he was drafted as a lottery ticket and then he was maybe the most dropped player ever in week 1 that was not injured in fantasy football history. So yeah, those are your receivers. This is my question though. I texted this to Ariel yesterday and he kind of was like, nah, he's a Bills fan. He's like, he has a legacy, but what do you think Diggs's Bills legacy is though? Because for a while there it was like, man, this is gonna be one of the best pairings ever. But then it sort of goes out on a sour note. The Bills during Diggs's time with the team is like no success. I'm sorry. Like, you know, Nick Wright did a good job of outlining, like, there's 9 teams ahead of the Bills that have had more success than them from a playoff standpoint from during that era. Like, is he going to be a guy that comes, it ends with him kind of being mercurial and weird and he has the huge drop in the final game? Like, if he shows up at, you know, the tailgate 5 years from now, are people going to go nuts? Like, what's the Bills fan relationship to him by your estimation?
I think his legacy is him looking at the Kansas City Chiefs celebrate in the most famous still photo of the Bills era.
I thought the same thing. Yeah.
Now it sums up a lot of the team's successes and failures, no doubt. However, when I think of Stephon Diggs, that's the picture.
Yeah.
That's the photo. That's the imagery. Because a lot of Bills fans were like, "You won't forget that."
Mm-hmm.
You won't forget that, and you know, it just kind of hasn't played out the way they thought.
Mm-hmm.
He was not as good as they thought he'd be.
Mm-hmm.
Period. Josh Allen was chucking at certain points, and it could have worked to Stephon Diggs' advantage. But I think as an organization, if you have a 31-year-old wide receiver that doesn't want to be there and drops the biggest pass of the year,
mm-hmm.
it's probably time.
Yeah.
Now they clearly. Like, but when I see stuff like this, I'm like, whoa, did they see something at the combine that other people didn't see?
They were like, we need to get this guy out of here before this gets ugly and we get bad PR.
But the cap alone, JD, that cap hit alone on Stephon Diggs, it was panic to get him out of there. So listen, you're probably right too.
Yeah.
But I think they saw some real options.
It's a deep wide receiver draft. It's a really deep wide receiver draft. That's what everybody says. Like, it's extremely deep.
Cheaper, good calls they can make.
Yeah.
And we'll see. And listen, they can't do the Green Bay thing with Allen and not give him people. Like, yeah. They got to give him people.
Yeah.
So I think it was the right time to end it. I think the Bills put him in as many positions as they could to succeed. Yeah. I think in the biggest moments, he wasn't there, mm-hmm. and that will be his legacy. He wasn't terrible, mm-hmm. but he wasn't what they needed him to be.
Yeah, but it's like when you think back on that era of Bills teams, it is that still shot of, what could have been. Staring at that and going,
100%.
Yeah, what could have been if, you know, there was two less seconds on the clock. Okay, so you wanted to say shout out Malachi Flynn, because I just thought this was a twist of the knife for Raptors fans that are enduring some of the most painful losses ever. It's like you lose 133-85, and then you're like, I'm going to log off tonight, and then you try to close your laptop, and you just see Malachi Flynn scored 50 points. You're like, cool.
Thanks. In a loss.
Yeah.
In a loss.
Yeah, I know. It's Malachi. My opinion's changing on Malachi Flynn because he scored 50 points for a rudderless Pistons team in a nothing game, it's not a thing.
You and I both know in some fantasy basketball leagues, you're a deep league.
Oh, yeah.
Somebody picked up Malachi Flynn for a start last night.
Yeah.
Somebody. And may have just won their league. Yeah. What a story. Anyway, shout out for Malachi. That was nuts.
Yeah.
That was crazy.
Yeah. I was just going to say, I liked Malachi. I had nothing against him.
Yeah, me too.
I think he suffered from, he never got Nick Nurse's trust, and Nurse never gave him a shot, and probably hurt his career. But his legacy, if you want to be real, is that Masai took him over Desmond Bane one pick before. And that's tough to ignore, especially when all the draft Nick guys, like everyone was like, take Desmond Bane right now. And then they were like, Malachi Flynn. And I went, okay. And then, yeah. Anyway, that's the Malachi Flynn story to me.
That's a miss.
Yeah.
And he had a great night.
Yeah.
So good on him. I'm with you.
Okay. So I'm going to skip Jays because I got so mad about Jays. I'm going to ask you this. You were there. You were there during the Vince actual quitting on the team. And did you see Grange's tweet yesterday? He dominated it. He went out there and he just like crushed it over the fence. It was an amazing, amazing, amazing thread about how we overstate Vince Carter's importance to this country. And like, if it wasn't for Vince Carter, you know, we'd still all be living in caves, not knowing what basketball would be. But he's going to go in the Hall of Fame. He's going to be the first Raptor. He already said he's going to go in as a Raptor. Where are you on jersey retirement? Because I would just like to say I'm still against. Like, I will always be against, and I will never change my opinion on it.
It's going to, as long as Masai's there and Larry, it's going to happen.
I know it is.
He's going to get retired.
I know it is. But that's a night where, you know, there's some people that are going to want to be there, and I get it. You can forgive and forget. But to me, it's like you certainly never hang the jersey of a guy who quit on your team and set your franchise back like a decade. And to me, it's like I can't forget that. Like I just can't forget that and honor it with like, thank you so much. And I don't like the revisionist history with Vince. Like, you know how he's got the, oh, and I actually wanted to stay and I didn't really quit on the team. It's like, no.
Yeah.
Like
100%.
Yeah. You were faking the injuries. You were telling guys the plays. You were a huge malcontent. And it was to the point where you got forced out of town and they got nothing for one of the biggest superstars on the planet at the time. Like I just hate that. It's like it's a two sides thing. And it was, you know, the Raptors really are the ones who fumbled this. And it's like, no, I was there. I remember it.
Yeah. Like I still, the most unnecessary move of that whole exit was telling Barry Davis he's not dunking anymore.
Yeah, like that's what
I will never forget that scrum. Barry got gold in that. There's gold in them hills.
Yeah.
Like, what are you talking? Like, even if that's true, don't say it.
Yeah.
What are you doing? Don't say it. There's a lot of revisionist history, but my thing is this.
Yeah,
I've heard way too many NBA players on the court from this country talk about that era.
For sure.
I was anti Vince retirement for a very long time.
Yeah.
Well, very long time.
Okay.
I've come around. There was something in the air at Scotiabank that night when he was there with, I believe it was Memphis. And I've slowly turned.
Okay.
And I think it's going to happen.
Oh, I think it's going to happen. I think it's a lock.
In the good times, it was just magic. You can't deny that.
No, I'm not.
We can focus on the bad things. Listen, Jose Bautista's exit wasn't great. Josh Donaldson's exit wasn't great. I can make the argument Josh Donaldson did more in X amount of years than a lot of Jays did.
Agree.
Like, I just think you can't deny that MVP season. Like, what was 121 Dalmatians? I forgot how many RBI I had.
Yeah.
But it was insane.
Yeah.
So, like, I think with Vince, you have to look at that. I think he's a borderline Hall of Famer. I think he just gets in.
Mm-hmm.
Just. Gold medal, rookie of the year, the dunk. Well, gold medal's not nothing.
Yeah.
Not every NBA player that's gone to get a gold medal has gotten it.
I will say, here's what I would say, is Team USA gold medal means a lot less than every other country gold medal. Can we agree on that? Like, Team USA basketball medal?
Well, I don't agree, because you have to get to that point to make that team.
All right.
That's my only return of serve to that, but I hear what you're saying.
Yeah, no, I get you. I feel that. I agree with that.
So I'm happy he's getting in.
Uh-huh.
And Billups. Love Billups.
Yeah. Oh, who didn't love Billups?
He's great. Yeah. And I just think I'm good with it.
Yeah.
Because I've come to this conclusion, JD. The good times outweighed the negatives.
I agree in terms of impact. I agree in terms of what he meant to those players. I agree that he was the first thing that turned it around from the Raptors going from a joke to something fun. He brought in so many casuals that wanted to see him. He was so high flying. He was so incredible. Even now when we did the Anthony Edwards dunk and we talked about who are the best in-game dunkers of all time, my brother and I had a phone call and we just laughed because we were like, man, you know, my favorite first player ever was Sean Kemp, who I think is the most powerful in-game dunker ever. But some of the stuff Vince would do in-game was go watch his YouTube today. Go watch Vince in-game dunks. And you're like, that was the thing that was happening? It's like, yeah, it was. It was happening. I think it's just a two things can be true thing, is that you're awesome. But to me, if I was running a franchise, I'd be like, we have to have a standard of, if you quit on the team, you're not going up, and you're certainly not going up first. And I wouldn't do it, but I'm petty and I'm I'm bitter.
Dude, you and I can have a petty off. Petty town.
I know they're going to do it, and I don't think it's the world's worst thing anymore. It's fine. You're right. The good, that's the right
Kyle.
Perspective. The good does
not
outweigh
before
the bad.
Kyle.
But that's
there's
the thing.
There's got to be priorities to this.
I think they've
got to be that's my only stipulation.
Guess what? They're going to do it before Kyle, though. They're
going to
do it before Kyle. They're going to do it before Kyle.
I disagree with.
I agree with disagreeing, but I'm telling you that they're doing, if they're doing it, they're doing it before Kyle.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're right. Timeline wise,
yep.
You are correct.
Yep.
There's something about that rubs me the wrong way.
Yeah.
But that's my only stipulation. I've retired the number. Get away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's the penalty.
Yeah.
That's the penalty. You just got to wait a little bit.
I agree. Hey, Sid, thanks for making time today, brother. I always appreciate it.
I promise me you're going to call me again about the Jays.
Yeah.
Promise me.
Hey, guess what? Here's my guess. We're going to have a lot of times, a lot of opportunities to openly be frustrated about the Jays. I don't think that this was we missed the one window where you could have sounded off on the team. I think it's going to be you'll have your time to shine.
Okay. You're right. The segment, my favorite word of the week, the segment was an outlier.
Yeah.
We will talk about it again.
It was an outlier. Hey, they were just doing what they thought was their best chance to win, and they got one hit. It was good. It was a great hit, though. Wow. Flare to the left. Yeah, that he was praying on. He flared it out there. They almost got no hit twice in the same series. Good stuff. Outlier. Sid, thanks for making time, brother. Looking forward to BT tomorrow with all those Leafs legends.
No, it's going to be fun. Take care, man.
See you, buddy. Sid Sixero, BT. Quickly, are you guys all – because you guys are the – Simon is old like me. You two are young, though. You're the puppy dogs. The puppies want to see Vince. Do you guys care about Vince? What do you know about Vince?
I care about Vince, and I want to see Vince. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. Mike?
Don't hang him up. I don't want to see him in the rafters. It's got to be Kyle first, for sure.
Kyle first is the correct answer, but again, it's not going to happen. They're not going to wait on this for 2 years. Plus, they need something to do.
Currently.
they need a thing that is
something, for sure. Yeah. No, and I'm kind of with Sid. I was very staunchly, because, it was funny. High school when Vince quit, and it was, devastating when he quit on the team.
Yeah.
Remember that? Talking to your buddies about, it was wild to watch in real time him faking injuries and not being aggressive at all, and then going to the Nets and immediately being amazing again. Yeah. But I've kind of come to Sid's point of view of I now just, when I think of the Vince era, I less think about the ending and I more think about the game winners and the dunks and all the good times. So, but yeah, before Kyle would be awful. And we'll also probably have him.
So first of all, that's fine. Just, I would like to say this. Vince, killed the Raptors in a playoff series.
Mm-hmm.
Where he had 37, 27, 30. Those are three of his games in the Eastern Conference round one when they did play Vince. That's the most upset I've ever seen this fan base during the older person times. He did the graduation thing. He absolutely quit on the team was faking injuries, was making a huge stink, was forcing his way to one spot, and yeah, put the Raptors in a position where they ended up trading for a guy who didn't want to be here in two Williamses. Were horrific. So as much credit as Vince Carter gets for quote-unquote basketball in this country, I don't think that he actually gets enough said about how he killed basketball in this country for essentially a decade, because that put them behind the eight ball. There's a difference to me between an acrimonious leave and a full quit where you fake injuries, tell the team, the other team. I was there, I watched that game. I remember I was at my dad's house watching him tell Rashard Lewis what the play was coming out. To me, that's the focal point, is that you can leave a team. You can have a bad exit with a team. You can close the door with that. You can come back from that. The good times do outweigh the bad times. But when you quit on an organization and you set them back a decade, I'm like, I don't really want to hang your jersey in the Raptors. I don't want to look at that and think about that when it's up there. That's all.
Perhaps
anyway.
You wouldn't have to think about that if we had competent management at the time and we actually got a better return.
But this is what I'm saying, is that the spin zone has been done so well that the guys who weren't there, like you, believe that is the actual case. Anyways, we got to take a break and then we'll hit what we missed.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
All right, we went long in that first block. What did we miss? Simon Douglas.
Got to talk line brawl. Devils, yeah. Rangers, puck drop. Everybody's fighting.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's so awesome. It's the most awesome thing.
No negatives.
No.
No, I agree.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Like, did you see Rempe leaving and he's hyping up the crowd? Oh, yeah. See, to me, actually, the beauty of it, too, was afterwards... everyone in the dressing room speaking about it and how, like, I'm not going to play the audio, but what's the enforcer's name from Jersey? The guy who fought Rempe.
McDermott?
Yes. How he's like, I respect that kid. He's like, he's trying to do what he can to stay in the league. And I was like, that's the brotherhood stuff. That's the thing that some people just don't seem to get, because I get it. Some of you just look at it and you see, like, blood, violence, gore, you think like, oh my God, it's the worst thing ever. Even though, again, like, you know, soccer, women's soccer, youth soccer gets you more concussions as well as anything because it's headers. And it's like the ways we get these concussions is like the real sticking point for people. The fact that these guys have acknowledged the risk and they take it, it still gets completely dismissed by some people who just don't like violence of any kind in sports, whatever. But for those of us that get it, we realize that it's an entertainment product and that's unbelievably entertaining. And yeah, Rempe doesn't look too upset about it when he's hyping up the crowd and he's loving life and a celebrity in New York City.
Yeah.
Seems like a fine life to be. It seems okay to be in your early 20s, 6'5", good looking and tough as nails and famous. It's probably
plus
good
you get
mix.
To beat people up sometimes.
Yeah, it's probably a good mix. Yeah. Probably not gonna cry for him. I just thought it was cool to see it. I love a line brawl. I love when the refs are overmatched and when guys are pairing up and thinking like, who do I take? It was great for hockey.
I'm always
two
just
teams
reminded,
hate each other.
Hate
is good.
Yeah, and line brawls I love where it's just like there's nothing you can do about it. If we decide to go 5-on-5, the refs just have to be like, yeah, all right, well,
that's what I mean. So great. I loved it. I was like, I don't really know what else to say. Like I'm on the record as I believe in fighting. I'm glad that they got out a lot of the theatrical stuff. I'm glad that players now know the risks. I'm glad that there are people who understand this better. There are people who give advice to guys like Rempe who will actually reach out to him and try to teach him how to protect himself more. I'm not clutching at pearls when this stuff happens, and I'm certainly not ever going to downplay how fun it is and how many people actually enjoy it and try to pretend as though this is like a vast majority of people who hate that stuff who like hockey. Like, it's not true. But whatever. I'm off tomorrow. Subscribe and review. Leave 5 stars. I'm still on Leafs Talk this weekend with Borny, and then I will see you Monday for home opener. One of my favorite days of the year.